before I like give this shit up forever, I'm going to try and see if someone will pay me to do this in front of people. They're screaming at me, "Fuck you, get the fuck off the stage." They started throwing
shit.
It was like hardest crowd I've ever played for. Part imposter syndrome, part like anxiety about whether or not I was interesting or entertaining enough to keep this going as like a sustained career.
Milk. Mark Rubier, a.k.a. Loop Daddy, a.k.a. the Mozart of Dallas. He's gone from performing to a camera in his room to playing Coachella in just a few years. He's constantly going viral with his raunchy, funky music that he improvises on the spot with a live audience. He often plays these songs out in public wearing nothing more than his underwear and a robe. How does Mark react when he gets booed off stage? How is he able to create banger after banger without any preparation? And why did his music cause beef with the Prime Minister of France? I'm Anthony Padilla, and I spent today with Mark Rubier to find out. Hello, Mark Rubier.
Anthony, how do you do, my man?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks for having
me. Yeah, thank you for coming out. So, 2.5 million subscribers on YouTube, over 500,000 monthly Spotify listeners, but I feel like even the most popular there. I feel like you go viral all the time, all over the internet, for all different sorts of reasons.
Yeah.
Instead of just talking about it, I feel like we should just do a demonstration of what it is that you are doing when you are going viral.
Fuck yeah.
You down?
Yeah, let's do it.
I feel like we could spend forever talking about how you create what you create, but I feel like we just got to do a demo.
What do you think about a good little demo?
I'm down, dude.
You down doing a little demo?
We could spend forever talking about it if you'd rather do that.
I would rather see it.
Okay, cool.
I would rather see it happen.
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm
better at that.
I'd rather hear it.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay, so what we're going to do, I think, is maybe we'll have you just give me something to any rhythm. It doesn't have to be a beatboxing thing. You could do like, but you could do any old thing that's okay. To a rhythm
all
that
right.
You want to do.
Milky milkshake. Milky milkshake.
Milky milkshake. Keep it going.
Milky milkshake.
There it is.
Milky milkshake.
That's it, right.
Milky milkshake. Milky milkshake.
There you go.
Milky milkshake.
Oh. Oh.
He's got the tempo a little bit.
Milky milkshake. Milky milkshake. Milky milkshake.
We're gonna put this in the
chat. Milky milkshake.
Layers and layers and layers and layers.
Exactly. Think about, and then maybe we can put a little bit of
milky milkshake. Milky milkshake. Milky milkshake. Milky milkshake.
Milkshake.
Creamy.
Milky milkshake.
Creamy.
Milky milkshake. That shit is milky, bitch. That shit is milky, bitch. That shit's that milky shit. It's malted milky shit. It's milkshake shit. Put it up in the cream. Stir the damn cream. Now you got a milkshake. That's some milky shit.
Milky milkshake.
Anthony, he's got a milkshake. Yeah. What's the flavor? Weird flavor. Milk.
It's all about that cream.
It's all about that milky,
the viscosity,
the
density,
the perfect amount of drip.
You know what I mean? That's right.
When I'm pouring that straight down my gullet, I want it to be a certain consistency, and I felt it.
I couldn't agree more.
That's part of the magic. It feels like a live show, which I feel like we've gotten so used to this idea that everything is streamable and accessible at any moment. So it kind of reduces the charm, I think, that it has of having that live element that we had to be there.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's nice. I think that's what people respond to, at least partly, is that you're just watching me think of whatever the fuck it is I happen to do.
I feel like that's also part of the charm, is that people get to see someone so confidently work through the process of creating something. Mm. I feel like it helps show people who might otherwise feel like, you know, anxiety or fear around messing up.
Yeah.
They get to see you mess up and then just recover, because that's part of the process.
I hear that a lot. Yes. From people who, that tell me why they enjoy it, or it's I think a big part of it is like, it's like a relatability thing, you know, because generally if you're an artist, musician, whatever, you're putting out almost always like the finished, the most polished, the most perfect version of what you've written. It's gone through mixing, mastering, many drafts, whatever. And so, we're always presented with this shining, perfect package. And it's like, this is what goes on in the lead up to that. And I've just happened to, make a living out of that part.
Yeah, you're like, my package then isn't always that perfect. It took work for my package to look that good.
It takes grooming, trimming.
Mm-hmm. And you get to see it live.
You get to see it live. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get to watch me lube it up live.
And I want to get more into what that entire process is like and how it differs from that polished version that most musicians will release. Yeah. But first, I feel like we should talk about, before you started this career, what was your career looking like? Where did you think that you were going before that?
Oh, man. Well, I wanted to be an actor first. I've been playing piano since I was a kid and acting since I was a kid. And so I went to college for acting, dropped out, and then I basically spent 10 plus years like attempting to do music in some form or another, producing beats, doing little projects with friends here and there, but like never any real success on any level. Alongside that, I'm working, I'm waiting tables, executive assistant.
Did you work at a call center?
I worked at a couple call centers. I did cold calling for like a software company, and then I did customer support for like a boating and hunting safety certification. I did mortgage loan servicing, customer support. I did all sorts of crazy shit. And then I, it's like every once in a while I would give up on the music thing, because it had been so long and I didn't feel like I had what it took. And after a decade, I was pretty much convinced that I wasn't gonna make it.
Were you attempting to go the traditional route of creating music that was polished and, recorded in the studio and then released and then you tour and like do that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, touring, that was...
Sure.
It was a pipe dream. It wasn't even a thing. I basically was trying to make stuff that was interesting enough that it could stand alone as like maybe an album that I would release, or the thing that I was more expecting was to make like beats for rappers and become a producer.
Got it.
Basically. I guess that was the dream.
And did you kind of start going down that path?
Tried. I was like, I made a bunch of beats under this different name. I never got paid to make shit for anybody. I was just making shit and putting it up on SoundCloud. It was like nothing.
So when did this start to happen then?
So basically somewhere along there, I moved to New York, and then I found out about Reggie Watts. You know Reggie Watts?
Yeah, I know Reggie.
That is the dude. He's like the OG improvised performance guy with a looper. Mm-hmm. He really like started that. I have the great fortune of calling him like a very good friend now. I've said this many times before, and it's just the truth, that like without his show, I straight up would not be doing this. I probably would have given up. He's directly responsible for my success, I would say. And so I saw his shit at some point, and he just like blew my mind. He was like, being able to do this kind of performance off the cuff, I just took in all of his shit. I started watching him a bunch, and it was very inspirational. I was like, if I could do some version of this in my own way,
that would be pretty dope. So at one point, I bought myself as a Christmas present this looper that I still use today, and learned it very quickly. That's part of what drew me to it, is that it felt very natural. I just took to it very naturally, because I already at that point knew music production, had been doing that for a while.
What was it that attracted you to doing this kind of thing live? What was it that made you feel like this was different?
You know, I have built in, because of all the theater I did and acting I wanted to do, performance energy, and have always been very comfortable on stage. I'm comfortable on stage. I'm comfortable in front of people. So that part was already done. Mm-hmm. And then it was basically this little transition of going from doing traditional production on the computer to like making little videos of me doing production with this looper. I just set a camera up and filmed myself making these little songs in like one take.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were like rehearsed a little bit ahead of time. Some of them weren't, but like it was this thing of you're just watching me make a song in about 2 or 3 minutes, you know? And so those are the videos that slowly, over the course of like a year or two, started to gain some viewership. You know, I get like 20, 30,000 views. And then at some point down the road, I lost a job. And it was at that point that I basically had like 2 months of rent to decide, okay, before I like give this shit up forever, I'm going to try and see if someone will pay me to do this in front of people. If not, that's it. Hang it up. Give it the fuck up. I was like almost 30 at that point, and it was like, I've had enough of like torturing myself with this dream.
So you went full in though, you know, you're like, this is the last ditch effort. Let's put it all in. Let's see what happens.
That's what did it.
So how did you make the next rent?
I paid rent within a month. I was paying rent. It was actually the first dude who gave me a chance was a dude who I used to wait tables for. He was like, come, I'll pay you $150. And you can play for like this beer festival he was doing. Mm. So that was my first like paid gig.
How'd it go?
It was a disaster, but like in a really kind of fun way. And it was really pretty much the same shit I'm doing now. You know, it's like I figured I had the show basically from the minute I got up there.
But it was a disaster in a good way. Why? Because people were able to see you like work live?
I was panicking and screaming, which is still kind of what I do, but I do it in a more controlled way, I guess. But like I was just throwing everything at the wall, and these poor people who had paid like VIP tickets to come to this beer festival are listening to me scream about pussy and the Academy Awards and shit. You know, it's just whatever, anything to get people's attention. But it went well.
Pussy Academy Awards. Right. I'm in.
It's like you're getting people's attention, I guess.
Yeah.
And so then I booked this other like Friday gig, something like that, at a bar. I book a Sunday gig at that same restaurant, but it's during the lunch shift. And then I book another Saturday thing. So I have 3 gigs at these bars and restaurants, and they're all $100, $150 for people who do not want to see. They have no idea, obviously, who I am.
Yeah.
They do not want to see me. And I'm up there screaming. But it's kind of the show it is now. It's like entertaining enough to watch me make some shit
up.
You
can't look away. You know, there's this.
Right.
Like, no matter what you're doing, you're like, something's happening.
It's something like that, dude. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it was something about the energy or something. But yeah, people stuck around. And then over the course of that year, so it's, within a month, I had finagled these 2 or 3 gigs a week. So I was paying rent. And then over the course of this year in Dallas, I just got to play over and over again and refine the show and figure out proper ways to do crowd work. And I got to cut my teeth at like all of these different places that they just unleashed me on their poor customers, you know? But I did that for a year.
Well, it's kind of like, it's kind of the immersion of going in there and trying the thing instead of like attempting to be perfect at it before you try it.
Exactly.
I feel like it's so common for people to feel like, I can't do that thing until I'm really good at it.
Right.
But it sounds like in your case, you learned in the moment.
Yeah.
You learned by playing these shows.
Yes.
In a sense, you learned while making money.
It's true.
How to do the thing that you do now that has been refined.
Yeah, I was very lucky to be in that position. It's true. And like, no rehearsing is the other thing. I mean, just sort of figure out how to make the show sound fine and get the sounds sounding good or whatever. But then apart from that, you just go in, plug in your shit.
Well, you kind of built into the way that you do your shows you built in not having to do any homework, not having to do anything yeah. beforehand.
That's the best part.
You
dude.
Get to show up and do your thing. Yeah. But it requires so much confidence to do that, to not have something planned, to know that you're going to figure it out in the moment. You have to have confidence in yourself.
Yeah, it is that, I suppose. A confidence that you're going to, something's going to happen.
That you will handle it. If something comes up, when something comes up,
right.
you will handle it.
Right, right.
Because yes. there is always going to be something that
yeah, you got to trust.
Throws you off, right?
Oh, 100%. Often. Yeah. There's either something going wrong at the show, or security's doing something weird, or someone yells some weird shit, or mm-hmm. whatever. And this is all stuff that you learn to embrace. Like, instead of like trying to put it away, you embrace, you draw people's attention to the anomaly. A good example would be at this Australia tour I did last year. I was billed right before Ice Spice. Not my audience. These were like 12-year-olds yeah. who were like there to see Ice Spice. And it was just a weird stage to be billed on. So I get up on stage. No one in the audience has any idea who I am. They're not interested. They just want Ice Spice to come out. Mm-hmm. They're screaming at me, fuck you, get the fuck off the stage, you know? Yeah. And so I basically just ended up making a song about fuck me, get me off the stage, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like that. It's like, okay, how do I turn this into something?
Yeah.
Eventually, I really did have to walk off because they started throwing
what? Shit.
It was hardest crowd I've ever played for.
You know? I thought you were going to say you won them over.
I was hoping, dude.
Yeah.
No.
No?
No. If I don't think a show has gone well, which happens somewhat regularly, if I think it's been a below par show, or I didn't come up with anything particularly interesting, you just have to trust that it went okay, and whatever, that I've done it enough times now that I'm capable of providing a baseline an entertaining show.
Yeah, I've gone through cycles of just overthinking, rumination of
really?
How something went.
Yep.
Like, whether it be just a singular interaction with someone, a performance of some kind.
Yeah.
And there's like, oh, that could have been better. Oh, wait, should I have done that? Oh. And it's difficult because you get in that loop and then it becomes this growing thing. But lately I've started to kind of reframe the way I think of it and just realize that I did my best in the moment, and that's all I can do.
I mean, I do the same sort of like, what do they call it? Like circular thinking,
where you just can't
stop revisiting the thing and every different scenario and paying attention, like all the details are
running. Oh, could have been better. Sometimes like even shaming yourself, like, why didn't you do better?
Dude, yeah.
Why didn't you know?
You're a piece of shit.
Yeah, how did you not know?
But it's poisonous, dude.
Yeah.
It's fucking poisonous. It's not productive.
There's really no point to it.
No. It happened. It's poisonous to give it too much power.
Yeah, because you can say, what did I learn from that? And that's a different perspective.
Right.
How did I fuck up?
Yes. That's sort of like, it's like masochistic.
Yeah,
sort of
yeah.
thing where you're like enjoying punishing yourself.
That's true. How did you get out of that cyclical thinking?
Well, I think my problem was more like part imposter syndrome, part like anxiety about whether or not I was interesting or entertaining enough to keep this going as like a sustained career. Do I actually have it in me to continue making interesting stuff?
How long ago did you have these thoughts?
Oh, I still have
okay.
them. Oh yeah, still very much have them. Existential sort of thoughts
yeah.
like that, you know? I've been doing it now professionally for 7 years, so it's not a super long time, but it's not super new either. And I still think about that, you know? And it's just like the reality is you kind of have to trust that those thoughts are, they're a sign that you are continuing to think about how to remain interesting, how to continue to create things that are, if you just sat there going, yeah, I'm fucking good. Yeah.
Right.
I'm fucking dope. I don't need to do. Then maybe you need to, you know, light a fire under your ass.
Right.
But I feel like these existential thoughts, in a way, even though I could maybe process them in a way that's a little more healthy, but I do think they're productive because it's a sign that, like, you're still interested in pushing and remaining interesting and doing something that evolves your work or whatever the fuck.
I feel like it's a sign that you care.
Right.
Which is good. Right. I agree. You know, like there are cycles of worry that could get on and you could be like, oh, it just means I care. But
do you have existential thoughts like that?
Definitely.
Really?
And, you know, that's been part of the process is realizing that I don't have to process these emotions as worry.
Yeah.
I can still observe these emotions and thoughts happening without attaching the cyclical worry to it. So, you know, I can be like, I'm like, why did that thought come up? Oh, I care. I care a lot.
That's some good therapy shit right there. I live the same
shit in
therapy, dude.
Yeah.
Where it's like, these thoughts will happen.
Yeah.
So you just, you observe them rather than allow them to suck the life out of you. You just, you look at them.
They are not you. They are not, they are something separate from you to observe.
Right.
They are not you and a sign of like, who you are in your state of being.
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah. Not a sign of your worth.
Yes, yes.
Or of your value or the sign of the quality of what you're doing. It's like, they're like human thoughts and anxieties that occur to us because we're in this business where we put ourselves in front of cameras and do shit and seek validation. We all want it. We all have egos. We want to be acknowledged and appreciated and respected. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think those... Yeah, those feelings come along with that.
So if you deal with wanting validation and whatnot, like, do you feel like you have your self-worth attached to what you create?
Probably more than I should, I would say. Even though the other thing I'll say is that I am pretty confident. I mean, I'm pretty confident and generally happy with the stuff that I make. It's not like a crippling thing, but I definitely, to a degree, attach my sense of value, integrity in that way to the stuff I'm making. Hard not to, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you're making it.
Does that sense of self-worth come from yourself in the way you perceive what you do, or others?
Probably mostly myself.
Okay.
But I think there's an element of how others perceive it too. But the other thing is that I get so much positive feedback. I'm not saying that to blow smoke up my own ass, but it's just true. My comment sections are generally like overwhelmingly positive places, you know, which is nice, but it's also makes me realize that like I can't really trust my audience to give me good feedback.
Well, that's kind of good though, because then you aren't attached to the positive feedback.
Right.
And maybe you aren't attached to the negative feedback either.
That's true. Not that much. It's like I've learned that like you, I'm sure you know this, it's like everyone who puts themselves out there knows this, is that like you're just going to get shit. It doesn't matter what you do. You will always get shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Always. And it's just the way it is. And like the sooner you can learn to divorce your feelings and sense of sensitivity, self-worth from that kind of criticism, the happier you'll be. It's just not worth dwelling on.
Or the way you present yourself kind of helps people maybe realize that you're not taking yourself as seriously. I don't know, like you have a very casual way that you present yourself. You'll straight up go shirtless. You'll go in just a robe. You'll perform like with a bra on, like you'll just do whatever the fuck feels right in the moment.
Yeah.
And I think it adds a sense of, you know, this guy doesn't take it too seriously. How could I take it too seriously?
That's a great, yes. If there is one of the few little theses that I would like to impart on people through this stupid show I do, it's like, I think one of the big ones is that life is filled with horrible tragedy, and it's filled with the opposite of this beautiful, excruciating joy, and then all the little minutia and average shit in between, and like it all amounts to this wonderful experience, and no individual piece really matters all that much. It's like just allow yourself to exist, breathe in and out, appreciate being alive, take things as they come, and hopefully the show is like a weird mirror for that kind of experience of just like, I am acting up there like I don't care.
So your music isn't generally political, but it has gotten there.
It has in the past, yeah.
So tell me about that with the Prime Minister of France.
Oh my God, yeah,
that was a fun
dude.
Moment.
Okay, so basically I went to play this festival in northern France called Le Touquet, I think. And it just so happens that the president of France and his wife have like a summer home up there. And so they're there sometimes. And they happen to be there at the time that this festival was happening. And Macron, who is the French president, Emmanuel Macron. I don't like,
close,
you know,
enough.
It's, I don't like switching into, I was just talking to my girlfriend about this the other
what,
day.
Like switching it's a French annoying. Accent?
Yes, when people have like, it's like you you can speak in that accent,
yeah.
but you're having a fully English conversation,
yeah.
and then you just move really quickly into like a croissant, you know, like into a French-ass accent.
Wait, so what's the French-ass?
Just say croissant, bro,
what's the French-ass, you know? Way to say it, then?
The Macron. Emmanuel Macron.
Okay.
Which is obnoxious to move into that. Let's start it again. I'm going to go. So the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, is up there
close,
with his
close
wife.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know you know how to say it. You don't gotta say it any other way.
I got the accent.
Yeah.
We don't need to bust it out just to show off.
You're good.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
So Macron and his wife.
Macaroon.
Macaroon.
Yeah.
Manny Macaroon.
Yeah.
And his beloved wife are up there. I don't know. They have a summer home up there or something.
Yeah.
So they were there at the time of this festival. I like to tease, particularly politicians, because it's fun.
Sure.
And so anyway, I went up there, and it was rumored that him and his wife were coming to the festival.
Okay.
And so I got on stage and did this big fuck you Macron song.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's chanting it, and the director of the festival got so pissed. She came up on stage, walked over to me, and said, "You have to stop this shit right now." It was this big thing. It turns out they were at the festival, but I don't think they were on the festival grounds yet.
Okay.
Anyway, like the day after, long story short, there's like every major news outlet in France is reporting on this having happened. It's like a major news item. I'm going on the radio, interviewing, whatever they give, for basically saying fuck you to like a politician. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was this thing of like, wow, France used to have a law against like verbally criticizing the president. You couldn't do that.
Mm.
And only recently did it become legal. And so it's like a big deal to do it.
Mm.
And yeah, it was just this crazy thing of like, then the festival didn't want to pay me. And they eventually did. They paid me,
okay.
So they're good. But like they handled it very poorly, and it just it was just this crazy news item.
And you weren't like, obviously you weren't expecting that.
No, I mean I've done that here plenty. I made a fuck Trump song, you know.
Yeah.
I did all sorts of shit where that's no one cares. It maybe get some comments on the internet and shit.
Yeah.
But like it's not a news item, you know. It's just this weird thing of like, are you really allowed to? I mean, you're almost not allowed to say it, you know. It's like you're very nearly not allowed. And I guess at some point very recently you were not allowed.
Right, yeah, which is wild.
Kind of crazy.
You should be able to criticize people who run your shit.
100%.
Right.
We should be able to criticize anyone with any amount of power.
Uh-huh.
Period.
Do you see your music as political? Or was that a moment?
I'm happy to make it political.
More
than happy. I will say I'm not particularly politically educated in terms of details. But I do have very strong opinions on the imbalance of power, imbalance of wealth, and I do know a good amount about how that's been misused in the past. I will more than happily criticize anyone and everyone in those seats of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, fuck you.
Do you feel like anything from your childhood set you up to have this kind of mindset and approach to life? What do you think it was that kind of gave you this point of view?
I'm an only child, so it's like every only child or most, you're like the light of your parents' lives,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was very loved, very supported, very encouraged. You know, they put me in a bunch of things to see what I would like the best, theater and then piano, and those are the things that I like really took to. But, so yeah, it's this sort of open encouragement to do the things I love and being supported in those decisions. You know, even when I think there was a lot of times where I did things with, you know, dropped out or whatever that they didn't agree with, but, and that we argued about, but ultimately, they're there to support.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that loaded me up with these feelings of that extra energy that I can give away now to other people of, you know, go get it. Do the thing you want to do. You can do this. You have it inside you is a lot of the motivational messages that come out of my songs generally, or like, you know, a lot of motivational shit like that. Broad, you are loved, I love you, you can do this, you got this kind of thing, which, you know, I just hear a lot from people that is just a message that they need to hear for a variety of reasons. Yeah. You know, they just ended a relationship, or they lost a job, or they're just depressed or whatever. And there's like a terrifying amount of people that have not gotten that message enough.
It's not just hearing it that helps, it's seeing someone live it.
Oh yeah, maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what's inspiring, because you can read it all day, you can read quotes all day, you can have a therapist tell you what you should be thinking, and
that's true.
Seeing someone live it, I think that's where you find the inspiration to apply it to yourself. You see it actually play out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe that, I imagine that is an element, right? Because it's like, yeah, it's coming from me, and I definitely do have that in me. I mean, I have, it's like I said, I got very lucky. I had a really, like, you know, fortunate childhood that was filled with, like, good people, good parents, good experiences, loving environment that allowed me now to have, yeah, just to have this energy to give away.
You're doing this, and you're doing great at all these improvised songs and performances and tours, but you're also going to be experimenting with some recorded stuff?
Yes, I am currently experimenting with that.
Yeah? How is that process different from recording it live?
Oh, it's wildly different. I mean, it's like, it's getting back. What's interesting is it's putting me back in this place where, you know, I talked about this decade of trying to do music in a traditional way. I'm familiar with that workflow. I just haven't done it in years. I haven't worked this way in years. So now I'm in the studio with a producer, with studio musicians, and I'm bringing in ideas, and we're sitting there playing them out as like a little band. There's a drummer, there's a guitar, there's a bassist, there's me on the keys, and we're switching things around, trying things out, playing them out, rehearsing an A section, a B section. We turn on the tape, we're recording it to tape, and then we get these elements, and now we're piecing them out, putting them together. I'm thinking about lyrics and writing them. It's all shit that I never do.
Yeah, how's ever. That process been for you?
It's good, dude. It's really invigorating. You know what I mean? It's like a different, just whenever you take something and refresh it or put it in a different context, if it's something that you like to do or something that you like, it's nice to see something through a different lens. You know, I already know pretty well this way. I get to see the same thing and work on it this way.
Well, I feel like you almost have went into hard mode first.
Yeah.
And then now you get to do the way that people are usually most comfortable doing what they do.
Yeah.
Do you feel like doing all these live shows and improvising in the way you have has helped you approach this in a different way?
It's definitely made me very confident in what I'm looking for, you know, because it's like through these years of playing these shows where I have to make snap decisions every night, I have to feel very comfortable with an instinct, lay it down and run with it. I feel like my ear has become very attuned to what I like and the thing I want to hear. So in a studio environment where you're sitting there for 10 plus hours, you're writing this out, I find myself very easily able to say, bring this down, bring this up, let's redo this little piece, I would like to put this here. All the little studio intricacies that you get to fiddle around with that I get to do on a much broader scale on stage in a way that's more rushed, not as detail-oriented, but here I get to really hone in on like details and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've got two songs that I am really very happy with, and one in particular called Vibes All Right that I think is like super solid.
And is there a full album that you're dropping soon?
I don't know. That was originally the intention, but yeah. I think I'm gonna bite the cookie off. What is the thing? One bite of the cookie? I don't know.
Bite the chunk of the cookie off. One moment at a bite.
Chocolate chip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically I'm gonna focus on making good songs and release them as singles and see how it does. I'm gonna do a music video for this. But yeah, I'm gonna do a whole, you know, just the standard thing that we were talking about is exactly the thing I don't do. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do
nice.
Cover art, a music video, a release, you know, all that shit. Pre-save, link, whatever.
Yeah. Do you think that shows that you're evolving into this direction, or is this just one extra element of what you do?
I think it's an extra element. I don't know if it would be wise to ever really totally give up the show that I do.
Yeah.
Because it's, well, first of all, it's the bread and butter, and I love doing it. You know, it's like, I don't know. It would be hard for me to imagine totally giving it up. And then like starting to do shows where it's like just me and a band and we play these rehearsed songs. It'd be fun. I'd like to maybe do a little bit of that. Maybe that these are out now. It's like I can bring a band out for a song maybe at the end.
Yeah.
Maybe we play it out like that. You know, so I test it. But
that'd
I don't,
cool.
Yeah, I don't ever see me getting rid of like the thing.
So are you touring as well? What's that like?
I am touring. Yeah, I'm doing a big Europe, North America tour that's like a ton of dates, a bunch of festivals in Europe, a collection of headline shows in like Paris, Amsterdam, London, Berlin, and then a big North America tour with a collection of headline shows in all the major markets, New York, LA, Dallas, you know, Seattle, whatever. And yeah, about to hit the road. I'm very excited. It's I'm super pumped. It's one of my favorite things about this job, for sure.
Is the touring, is the live element. So when people come out, they get to see how long, like how much time do they get to see of you like improvising?
It's like 90 minutes.
90 minutes. 90 minutes. Yeah. We got like that 5 minute version that we saw here.
Exactly.
People could get 90 minutes of that on your show.
90 minutes of that. I walk out. I have no idea what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And you come on that journey with me. A lot of people will get up on stage. There's a lot. I'm getting out. I run out into the crowd. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's chaos.
Yeah.
Every night is chaos. And it's, yeah, man, it's just great.
I think maybe the most interesting part about it is that someone, if they wanted to, could go to every show of yours.
Yes, they could.
And it would be a new show every time.
That's true, man.
They would never be like, oh, I saw this set before.
It's true. That's there are people that will do, that come to stretches. You know, it's like if they're like West Coast based, they'll come to the Pacific, you know, they'll come to the North Pacific Northwest down to LA or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's fun. Yeah. Cause you're getting a different show. I mean, it's.
That's something unique. You know, not many performers are able to offer that.
That's true. It's true. It's something a badge I wear proudly, that you don't get the same show twice. You get the same idiot up there screaming about shit, but it's a different show.
Same idiot, different show.
Same idiot, different. That's nice, actually.
You can have that.
Thank you.
Yep. I want.
You can invoice me.
Okay. Yeah, I think I will.
Venmo or Zelle?
Yeah. Zelle works.
Zelle, okay, good.
Yeah.
Something has to be wrong with anyone who is willing to pursue power at that scale.
Okay.
You know what I mean? There's something there. There's something inside you.
Like a reason for it?
Yes. Some that is driving you to so ruthlessly pursue power at that scale. I want to be the top, the best. I want to climb over everyone else.
I want my decisions to matter.
Right. Something's not right there. You know what I mean? Mm. It shouldn't be allowed. It's like you...
Oh, and the police are coming for you. You can't say that shit. You can't fucking say that shit.
Cuff me.
Yeah.
Cuff me, bro.
You're out.